Recorded live on September 10th, 2025, from the studios of WMCX 88.9 on the campus of Monmouth University, this is the first episode of the newly branded monthly podcast series, Monmouth Matters, with an inside perspective from University President Dr. Patrick Leahy. This is faculty member Matt Harmon. Thanks, as always, for your support and for listening.
Well, that sounds really official, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does indeed.
Welcome back. It is September 10th, a rainy Wednesday. Super excited to be here in the studios of WMCX 88.9. You might have heard right from the get-go a name change. We have gone through a rebranding in the off-season. How about that?
Yeah. That was an official process we went through and came up with a new name. And you'll explain, I think, a little bit more our new get-up
here. You know, when we started, I was in the room next door at COVID, and we've made this joke before. I had special permission to be on campus because I was pretty much the only one who was allowed to come up here, and we started what was meant to be kind of a look around the world of COVID and getting news out. We called it Monmouth Weekly at that point because, in fact, for a stretch, we were on every week, giving everybody updates over COVID. We've evolved a little bit, and we are now going with Monmouth Matters. We have a full cast of people in the studio today, including a handful of our students, of which during the course of the show we'll get into a little bit. That, I know right from the start, makes you a very happy university president.
Exactly. I'm thrilled to be both taking full advantage of our first-rate facility, but more importantly, to be in the company of our first-rate students. So this will be a lot of fun collaborating with you still and with our students from communications.
So the name change, I want to talk about that as well, because I enjoyed actually the back and forth about what are we going to call the show. We thought maybe Monmouth Monthly, because we're going to try and do this once a month in the studios of WMCX. I think we threw out, this is Monmouth? Around campus,
Monmouth
Matters,
today.
Monmouth Today. We went with Monmouth Matters with the perspective from University President Dr. Patrick Leahy. I'm faculty member Matt Harmon. Great to be back with you. We'll go through this up until about 10 o'clock, about an hour-long show that we're going to do once a month here at WMCX. And then I started to think, what if we went a whole nother direction? What if I know we've rebranded and we're going with Monmouth Matters, but we could have probably had some more fun if we wanted to. I was thinking Pat and Matt, we could have went with the Prez and the Prof.
Wow.
That could have been one.
I don't remember you proffering those ideas.
Maybe scandals around campus. We could have went in a whole nother direction if we wanted to.
Try to turn this into a Netflix show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Speaking of, that's going to be a big part of where the university is heading with Netflix taking over the Army base that used to exist over in the Tinton Falls, Eatontown area. Let's just jump right into it because we've got a lot to cover today here on Monmouth Matters, again from WMCX 88.9. I want to start with this, and it kind of goes along with the name change, the rebranding, and kind of the idea of why we do this. Why we did it back in 2020 was to talk about COVID and to get university updates out there. Then we've, over the course of time, evolved. We've had guests on the show. We've gotten information out more on a monthly basis. I want to say this to you and ask just honestly why you want to maybe continue it and why it's important that we have the group that we have in front of us here today as part of the show moving forward.
Well, first and foremost, it's a ton of fun to be collaborating with you and to get our students involved. But you know, let me just go back as well and recapitulate something you said. You know, we did this on a weekly basis during COVID as a way to get information out to the community. You were here in the studio on campus. I was many times doing it from my car in the driveway of the Daugherty House because my house was so full of people, I couldn't find a quiet spot. So I would literally get into the car. And we started doing this on a regular basis to share information. And it's like so many other things here. Once you start sharing information and communicating, and then when that slows and you threaten to stop it, you hear people say, no, don't stop it. You know, there's a group of us that sees value in this. you know, let's just keep doing it. So, you know, we've been weekly, then monthly, and then it was every couple months, and then we do it, you know, so we're just going to try to get into a little bit better established pattern that might allow us not only to continue to share information, but as you referenced, bring on guests that we might have both some fun engaging with, but also individuals that could help us share information around campus. And it was your idea to take it to another level and to formalize it, professionalize it, get our students involved who are, you know, budding broadcasters and communication specialists and producers and the like. So why not collaborate with them in this incredible studio that we have? So I'm delighted to be engaged in this.
Which, I don't know if you're aware, there's actually across the way a brand new audio board that was set up during the course of the summer. So I'll throw a quick shout out to Professor Eric Reicher, who's our technical engineer here with WMCX and Hawk TV. Aaron Ferguson, who's the WMCX advisor, also an alum here of the university. Nick Messina, who's a big part of the radio station. So we're all really excited to have you back in here. I think this is the third time that we've done it from here, right? We did one in December, we did one in the spring, and now back here on a monthly basis. So I'll say on behalf of everyone, thanks for the audio board. The old one is in the lobby if you want to take a look at it.
If I had something to do with it, I would accept your thanks. But this was great work by the department.
Second week of the semester, fall is up and going. Campus is buzzing as it usually is in the early part of the semester, especially when the weather's nice, not so much today with the rain. What does it mean for you, the beginning of the semester, which started last Tuesday, right after Labor Day, now week two of 14, it's going to fly by. We know that because it always does. But that post-summer lead into a new academic year when everybody's back on campus at the same time.
So we've talked about this before. I love the cycle of the academic year. I mean, the summer is really nice because we get a ton of work done around campus when the campus is de-densified, and everyone gets their vacations. So I always joke there are times where people say, "Oh, you work in education. What do you do all summer?" And I have to remind them that, you know, we're still at it all year, trying to get a lot done in the summer for the benefit of our students. So it naturally sort of falls into a different rhythm. But once the fall comes and the students start returning en masse, the energy of the whole place goes to another level. And, you know, we've talked about college campuses were built for energy and vitality and excitement. This is my 14th year as a university president. Can you imagine? 14 years. And I've never been more enthusiastic about starting the fall semester than I am this year because of the class that we brought in, which I'll talk to you about, the returning students, what we've been able to do with the campus, the plans that we have. Never been more excited in 14 years to be the president of the university.
You know, it's funny because I hate to try and always go back to it as a jumping off point, but now that we are, a full 5 years past when COVID started, not saying the end of COVID, but when COVID started, do you feel like now it's more of, it's a post-COVID world and we can kind of move forward? You know, you look and you say, what's going on campus and what we're building on campus and different things that even 2-3 years ago, you probably had to say, wait, we're going to hit the pause button on some of this because we're not sure what direction higher education is going and what the world's going to look like and everything that probably goes through the mind of a university president at that point. But now here in 2025, it's more of a normal world and it's more of let's move the needle forward a little bit.
So we're back to our normal challenges as an institution of higher education. Maybe we'll talk about those too. But just when you think COVID is clearly in the rearview mirror, a family member of mine gets positively tested, you know, just a few weeks ago. So it's not entirely behind us, but you're absolutely right, Matt, that this feels, shall we say, normal. And we are not now worried about COVID pauses and halting projects because of COVID concerns. I hope we are formally pass that, and we can just continue to advance the university.
Talk a little bit about what does go on specifically this summer, 2025, in between commencement in May. I know there is a busy time with a lot going on, but projects that maybe you want to highlight and talk about that took place the last couple months.
So in a typical year, and this summer I think was typical, you know, we have our commencement celebrations in, let's call it mid-May. And then there's a few key development events that we have at the end of May and into early June. Our Kislak Real Estate Dinner, which is a major event for us. Our golf outing, which supports athletics here. It's a major event for us. And then we have our board meeting in mid-June, our summer board meeting. And, you know, for the administration, in particular the president, that's a significant event in the year. But what we really try to do in the summer is take full advantage, as I said, of being a little bit, you know, de-densified, I guess is the term that came up in COVID, to work on the campus. And the major project this year was finally, after years and years and years of hoping, we put new HVAC systems in our two freshman residence halls, Elmwood and Pinewood, the only two that did not have air conditioning. When I started 6 years ago, Matt, it was contemplated that we would take those buildings down because they were old, they didn't have air conditioning. We knew that the students didn't appreciate not having the air conditioning, especially in the fall. And we just said, wait a second. We went and we inspected those buildings and we said, okay, they're old, but they're built. They don't build buildings like that anymore, and they could last us a long time if we chose to put money back into them, which we hadn't done for years. So we started years ago replacing floors and outfitting the lounges and putting a game room in, you know, all kinds of stuff like that, culminating in this summer putting air conditioning into those two halls. And so it gives us not only a chance to serve sort of all of our first year students equally, you know, everybody now has access to, you know, climate controlled residence halls. But also it gives us opportunities in the summer because we, you know, rent those out in the summer and try to serve other constituents in the summertime. So it is a big, it might not seem like it, but for us it's a big, big deal to finally have that project completed. And then there were a ton of other smaller things at the dining hall and over in athletics and across academic spaces. The biggest, though, I think, and maybe our students can confirm this, they came to me in the spring and they said, we're going to put offshore coffee in at the Parson Cafe. Now, forgive me, students, but I didn't know what offshore coffee was until I started getting feedback. You guys are putting offshore in the Parson Cafe. Apparently, it's a very popular spot. In particular, I guess, down on Brighton Avenue and other places, Asbury Park. And so we contracted with them to bring offshore coffee to Parson Cafe, and so far it is opening to rave reviews. So I just feel like if that's what the students wanted, I'm so pleased that, you know, we were able to deliver that.
We need like a sound effect, guys, when we move forward, when we get big news like that, you know, like some sort of explosion.
Red alert.
That would be the news of the day. The coffee is a hit.
Am I right, though? Is it offshore? Yeah, okay. I'm getting some nods.
Good. You got four nods across the board. We have a small sample size, but positive confirmation with all those. Let's go back a little bit. How we closed the spring semester last year, so much of the talk, and just to recap on it a little bit, in some ways, the academic year, and I know it's a longer process than that, but certainly the focus of the academic year last year was the accreditation process and getting middle states done and all that goes along with that. And I know you spoke to that last spring, but probably makes, even though the next accreditation process probably has already started in some regards, a wipe of the brow and a breath of just, wow, we're good now for the next 5 years.
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
8 years.
So, and you see how quickly I jumped on 8 years, because this is an arduous process. It took us over 2 years to prepare for this. And I know I mentioned it in our last broadcast. I don't think we were really that worried that we wouldn't be reaccredited. I mean, if we have worries about reaccreditation, we have major problems. I don't think we were worried about that. What was I was so proud of is how cleanly we were reaccredited. You know, no requirements, no recommendations even, and 12 different points around various points of the university, we were commended for our efforts. And that is as clean a reaccreditation as you could get. And that was way beyond even our highest expectations. And then it was confirmed at the end of June when the commission actually met. They heard the report of the visiting team, and they reaccredited us. So just to close the loop on that, it wasn't that we were reaccredited. I'm thrilled that we are, of course. It was the way in which we were reaccredited, which I think allows third parties, independent third parties from other fine schools, to come take a look at what we do here at Monmouth and to say, this is a first-rate institution. It's nice to have that third-party validation.
In that accreditation, what number was the podcast review?
Yeah, that
nine,
was one of
nine
the,
or
that
10?
Was one of the 12 commendations.
One of the 12. Great job on the communication with that
the
university.
I think they first referred to it as the president, the pres, and the prof, maybe. And
I might have stolen that from the accreditation. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. University President Dr. Patrick Leahy, myself, Matt Harmon, will be back talking Monmouth Matters with an inside perspective from University President. We're back right after this quick break. WMCX 88.9. Back here in the 9 at 10 o'clock hour, University President Dr. Patrick Leahy, faculty member Matt Harmon, WMCX 88.9. Thrilled to be back with you here, Monmouth Matters. Next topic, President Leahy, let's talk. You broached on it a little bit in our first segment. Let's get into it a little bit more detail. With now week 2 of the semester, I know the incoming class, you said, great energy in this class, great academic reputation in this class, something that, to be fair, you have said, I feel like every year, which means the bar keeps going up for students that are admitted and part of the Monmouth community.
Yeah, I think for 3 or 4 straight years, I've said the very same thing. This is the finest first year class we've ever enrolled at Monmouth. 3 or 4 straight years. I could go back and check that, but every year, the quality of the incoming class as a group, as a whole, is getting better and better. I always say, I mean, no disrespect to the 91 classes that we enrolled before, but the reason I say that is because you take 900 students, take their reported, you know, academic performance from high school, you average it across 900, and then you report out to important third parties what the average incoming GPA is this year. 3.67, which is the highest GPA in our history, a result of a couple things, if I may, Matt. One is we have a record number of students enrolled in our honors program. So Monmouth is the kind of place that can, you know, attract, you know, really high achieving students. The other thing we did in this cycle is we raised the floor, you know, like, we just raised the minimum acceptable standard because we had enough vibrancy in our applicant pool to be able to do that, just so we can bring students here that we know show incredible potential and then put them to work with our faculty to do amazing things. So it is both the finest academically prepared class we've ever had on paper. And then the other thing, you know, I'm going to talk about is it's also a very high access class, which is our commitment to making a first-rate private education as accessible as possible to deserving students, irrespective of their financial means. So this year, in this first-year class, the one that I just said was the finest that we've ever enrolled, we also have 56% of them are what we call FLY students, which are, they're either the first in their family to pursue a four-year college degree, and or they're low income by the federal definition. And that is a source of incredible satisfaction to me and to, I hope, all of us here at Monmouth. First-rate private education, as accessible as possible. As you know, in our strategic plan, we have a goal to integrate excellence and access like no other school like us in the country. And once again, all you have to do is look at the first year class to see that we're achieving that.
So, two questions. Are you telling me that as a graduate of 1996 that I might not get into the university if I applied here in 2025? Is that what's happening?
You might not. And, you know, we always say we're doing our job if that's the case. You look, I wouldn't have gotten into my undergraduate institution either. So you're not alone. But that's we're doing our job. It's like it's a little bit like when an alum comes back 10 years later or 20 years later and says, wow, I don't recognize the place. I just feel like that's confirmation that we're doing our job. Because if you came back and everything were exactly the same, you'd be wondering, what are we doing here to advance the university? So it's a similar kind of analogy around, wow, that's an increasingly, you know, qualified class. I'm not sure I would have gotten in. You probably would have, but...
snuck in.
But... it is, I hope, a source of pride for our alums, not offensive to them, but rather a source of pride for them that the institution keeps advancing in real material ways, hopefully burnishing the reputation, adding value to the degree that you have, or the two degrees that you have.
When we opened the broadcast today, we said we've got student involvement this semester. We've got Nick, John, Chloe, Frank, all part of running the board, filming, recording, which will be edited later on for use on social media and to promote what's going on campus. I would say you've mentioned all of these guys indirectly because they've been part of the last three, four classes because they're juniors and seniors. And I give credit to the students if this class right now that just came in starting fall of 25 is the best academically prepared class, which you have said, so were these guys at one point. So the students that are the upperclassmen now have also helped push the university forward.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. I mean, no disrespect to the classes who are here, because they, in their day, and at their incoming time, were the finest that we've ever enrolled. Look, I was a B student, let's be honest. So to be 3.67, I don't think I ever got to 3.67 in my entire academic career. So I have a great deal of respect for an average incoming GPA that high.
So that's where the idea of scandals at Monmouth, we could do some investigative work and maybe find your academic audit and dig into it a little bit.
Yeah, more. But we decided on Monmouth Matters, so don't bother.
So we're going to skip that. You know, on the list of topics, this one was brand new to me. I didn't even know this existed, and you can explain it. I know it's on the newer side. But I know you wanted to talk about and mention the New Jersey Financial Monitoring Report, which is something that's not brand new.
A few years ago.
A few years.
It's just something that the state implemented to check on the financial health of all of the higher ed institutions throughout the state of New Jersey, public and private. And we go through every year answering questions and filling out forms and offering statistics. And I was just really proud that of the five categories, we were sort of ranked or categorized as the least risky. Meaning, said another way, relatively speaking, one of the most healthy institutions from a financial standpoint in the state. And that's just a source of pride for me because, I know we're navigating some challenging times in higher ed, but to be able to do that, we hope continue to serve students in a really, meaningful way, but to do it in a way that preserves the long-term health of the university, I just think is an achievement worth touting.
Even though we said in our first segment, a normal world, things are moving forward. You've mentioned it twice, one in the first segment, one right now. The challenges that still exist in higher education, we can say things are a normal world and everything is great, great academic class, great last three, four, five academic classes, but that doesn't mean that there's still challenges that exist within the higher education world.
Yeah, and the biggest one, we've hinted at it over our time together, is the changing and declining demographics. The number of students that will be looking to enroll in colleges coming out of high school in the coming years is going down significantly. It's no fault of any you know, institution in particular, it's simply demographics. And if you think back to it, you know, what happened 18 years ago from this fall? Well, the Great Recession, you know, the financial collapse in, of 2007 and 8. And at that time, families just said, I'm not having kids, or I'm only having one, or I'm only having two, and they would have had three, you know. And it, consequently, you put all that together, it shows up in the demographics as fewer and fewer students graduating from high schools, interested in matriculating in college. And that puts a ton of pressure on colleges and universities, because we have plenty of great options. There's plenty of supply, if you will, to talk economics for a minute. And there's declining demand. And, you know, in economics, that creates a lot of challenges when there's oversupply. So that's the big challenge, I think. And there's a lot of other things that we could talk about. But the thing we've always worried about is when this the demographics start shifting, what is that going to mean for Monmouth and for other institutions? I feel like we are so relatively well positioned to deal with that. I can't imagine being in a lot of other schools right now. But I'll just say this last thing. I've often said it. Gave a major address to the campus community in late January of 2020, my first sort of convocation address to the campus community, and I laid out the great challenge facing Monmouth over the long run, and it was all about the changing demographics. Not one time did I utter the word COVID-19, and so when that happened just 6 weeks later, you know, it really threw off, you know, our momentum.
So, follow-up to that, you say Monmouth, and you have said this ever since we started doing this, through difficult times over the course of the last five, now 6 years, through really good times, that Monmouth is positioned to be a major player, or a player in the Northeast, or even nationwide, as a mid-major private university. I know that when tours take place on campus, or open houses take place on campus, or any opportunity that you get, you're talking to prospective students, you're talking to prospective student parents, and you as a parent that has a couple of kids now that are going to Monmouth, what's the message that you're trying to deliver when you talk to those parents and those prospective students?
The fundamental message is we want to be the high value proposition out there. We're never going to be the low-cost alternative. There's always going to be a place where you could get a four-year degree less expensively. We're going to do our best to keep the cost, especially after our discounting, which is substantial, you know, as reasonable and as manageable as possible. But value, as you know, Matt, is a function of not only what you pay, but what you get for what you pay. And that's where we have a real, I think, very strong value proposition. So I always say to parents, it's not one thing, in my opinion, that is particularly unique about Monmouth. It is the combination of four things. It is the opportunities of a large university in the culture of a small college on a beautiful campus in an incredible location. It's the combination of those four things that gives us that strong value proposition. And I wouldn't trade what we have for virtually any other private school in the sort of middle market anywhere in the country because of those things. The beauty of our campus in the incredible location, but that's not enough. It's what kind of opportunities do you offer students, and then how do you offer them? Because if you went to a much bigger place, you'd have the same opportunities, but there's no way we'd have a 12-to-1 student faculty ratio. You could go to a small liberal arts college and get a 12-to-1 student faculty ratio, but you're not going to have access to some of the things that we have access to in terms of facilities and Division I athletics and institutes and centers that we offer. See what I mean? It's the combination of those things that makes it so unique. But then I always say to parents and to students, none of that matters if we don't deliver the fifth most important thing, which is the outcomes that the students deserve. So we have to keep focused on what kind of preparation are we giving our students during their course of study so that we could get them properly positioned to get the job that they want upon graduation. They might pursue the career of their interests so that they might live the life that they want to lead. That is the most important thing. None of the other stuff matters if we don't use that to create a life-transforming experience for our students. I just like our chances against a lot of other institutions if we have a chance to explain that. And then what we always do is we just say, talk to our students and try to get a feel from them if they feel that.
Usually the best way for people to know exactly what's going on is to talk to the students who are presently here.
They expect me to say it because I'm the president, but usually when they get a chance to talk to our students, they get a good sense that, yeah, hopefully they feel this way. I have access to a lot of cool things, and I get to know my professors, I get to know the president. It's just a culture without trading off opportunity, and I think that's a unique combination.
Very well said, and an opportunity for us to take our last time out. When we come back, we'll dive into the world of athletics a little bit more on some Springsteen news. I'm not happy again that he was here and I was not invited. We're going to talk about that when we come back, and we'll reflect on a really important day in our nation's history, which comes up tomorrow on September 11th. This is Monmouth Matters, WMCX 88.9. Back here on Monmouth Matters, Inside Perspective from University President Dr. Patrick Leahy. Psyched to be here with our students today, Nick, John, Chloe, and Frank, part of our monthly podcast series. We'll be back in October, one in November, one to wrap things up in the fall semester in December. We're hoping that this goes well. I think there's like a long-term contract for you to sign on your way out today. We're going to try and lock you in for like the next 3-4 years once a month. No pressure, but
I want to see the terms.
The students put it together.
I want to see the terms of a contract.
Come once a month, show up. And we'll continue to promote the message. Last segment here, we'll have some fun with this one, fall sports, as we always like to do, bounce around athletics a little bit. Off to a great start. Let's go field hockey first, highest ranking in program history. Carly Figlio, the longtime coach, celebrating 200 wins over the course of the early part of the season, continues to be one of the best mid-major programs year in and year out.
Yeah, the ranking is evidence of that. 4-0 start is evidence of that. Now, I don't think we've played on the road yet, so I'm assuming we'll keep that up. But she has done such a fantastic job at Monmouth. My gosh, 200 wins, and she's a class act all the way. And all you have to do is ask her players how they feel about her. Really, really proud of our field hockey program.
19 in the National Field Hockey Coaches Association. You mentioned the 4-0 mark. They've beaten Cal, LIU, Temple, and Rider. Speaking of on the road, they've played 4 straight. They're now going to go 3 straight away from West Long Branch at Lehigh on Friday, at Yale on Sunday, and then the following Sunday at Rutgers before they'll be back home for Maine, Harvard, Hofstra, Drexel, and Columbia. This is an odd schedule. I have to talk to Carly about this. 4 at home, 3 on the road, 5 at home, 3 on the road, yeah. 1 back at home.
Well, you keep track of the home and away. I delight in the names of those schools that we're playing. Yale, Harvard, Rutgers, Cal is an ACC school, I think. They play.
I didn't even mention
the ACC.
Columbia, Princeton coming
Princeton.
Up.
I just love it. That is one of the reasons, as you know, that we fight to hold on to a competitive Division I program across all of our athletic teams because of the ability for us to play really marquee national schools, which I think every time we do, it burnishes the reputation of Monmouth just a little bit. And that is the best example of that after you read the schedule.
Men's soccer, also speaking of coaching, longtime coach Rob McCourt, he has now 200 wins in his career here at Monmouth, in which he's 20-plus years in. They're off to a good start in CAA play. They've got the reigning player of the week in Jason Patini, a win over the course of the week at Drexel, a draw against Stony Brook, a little bit of a shaky start, but now starting to find their way a little bit. Beat Iona back in September 2nd for McCourt to get his 200th win. Again, a program I think generally thought of synonymous with success.
With excellence. And Rob McCourt, 200 wins. I mean, you know, I think that says a lot about Monmouth and our athletics program that we have coaches of that long tenured, continuing even many years into it to bring it, and so that we might be as competitive as we are.
Women's soccer, always a traditional power here in the Northeast and within the CAA, another good start for them as well, bouncing around with Kylie Flynn, a team that right now is 5-2 overall. They've got wins over Bucknell, Binghamton, Temple, a win over Harvard, a win over St. John's. They'll play this weekend up at Columbia before they start their CAA schedule.
And I think our AD said this is the first time we've beaten an Ivy League school in a decade. You know, so that's just fantastic. Just everywhere you look across our athletics program, excellence. And we haven't even talked about football yet.
Yeah, we'll finish kind of the fall look at what's going on right now. Football, with two big wins, with an offense that doesn't look like anybody can slow down right now, opened up at Colgate, had an unbelievable come-from-behind win in game number one going into the Labor Day weekend. Last weekend, up at Fordham, that team 2-0, 18th in the coaches' poll at the FCS level, 21st in the FCS kind of media poll, of which I am a voting member. So good start for Kevin Callahan. Speaking of coaches that have been here for a long time,
I think, is this his
33rd year? Only coach in program history.
And I think, is he the winningest coach, active coach?
Winning activist coach at FCS.
Incredible. So to go on the road against Colgate and to come from behind and win that game, greatest comeback in our 33-year history, I'm told. And then to go on the road to Fordham. Again, two great schools, the kind of schools that you know, we want Monmouth to be thought of, like Colgate and Fordham. Those are really great academic institutions as well as great athletic institutions. To go on the road and win two of those games. And then this week, we go down to Charlotte, which is an FBS school. So they play, you know, at that higher level. And we think we have a fighting chance, even though we'll be playing up a level this Saturday.
Had an FBS win last year against FIU. Women's golf up and going, women's tennis up and going, cross country up and going. So busy, busy times. To go back to kind of what's been a theme for us, I feel like ever since we started this in 2020, the athletic academic world, when they blend together, you've got success on the field. It just gives a different feel and a vibe when you're walking around campus.
It's just exciting. It's exciting to know that our teams are as competitive as they are. I think this is our fourth year in the CAA.
Yep.
Is that right? So I don't think anybody questions, you know, whether we can compete in the CAA, given how well we're doing across all of our teams. Love having student athletes here because they work so hard and they do really well in the classroom. And I just hope that, you know, the campus community will turn out. It just adds an element of excitement around campus. Again, it's related to that, you know, the opportunities of a bigger place. Well, yeah, we don't have home football games like Penn State has home football games, but we can adjust that for our size and still have a ton of fun, you know, Saturdays in the fall for football or going to see a first-rate team in field hockey or our soccer teams. You know, it's easier to follow teams when we're competitive, and we're certainly very competitive this fall.
Certainly a big weekend non-athletically this past weekend at Monmouth. It's part of the 50th anniversary of the unbelievable album and the continuing budding relationship with Bruce Springsteen. Born to Run, celebrating 50 years. The Born to Run 50th anniversary symposium was here. Full day event that took place this past Saturday, September 6th. I know so many. I had a friend of mine who sent me a couple pictures. He was at it. He said it was an unbelievable event, day-long event, with so much activity. Part of what is taking place across the street as I'm looking in that direction the Bruce Springsteen Archives, the Center for American Music, that building continuing, and events like this day-long symposium, just kind of all, it all works, right? It all pieces itself together.
Well, there were, you're referring to the day-long symposium,
yep,
at which Bruce and all of the members of the E Street Band participated, in which they participated. But that was only one of six events that we had the whole week to celebrate the 50th anniversary of what many people in the business argue could be one of the most iconic albums in the history of at least rock and roll, if not music. So to celebrate that here and to do it across six different events, including, Matt, Sunday, an academic conference that we hosted here on campus for academics who are studying the impact of that album on society and the like. We were hoping for 30 or 40 submissions, paper submissions. I think we got 140 from all over the world. So I think that suggests how important that album is to our American culture. But to have Bruce Springsteen here talking as candidly as he did about that experience and then closing the symposium in Pollock Theater with all of the members of the E Street Band playing Thunder Road first and then the title track Born to Run afterwards, is just like, I sat there and I said, is Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band really playing Pollock Theater? And it did. And it's just, it's an exciting thing. And the fact that we can bring that to this campus, and as I've said many times, because of the generosity of so many donors, do that without tapping the resources of the university in the process, is a home run for Monmouth University.
We can get generational here for a second, because we've got four students who are much younger than you and I. And I will say, if you looked at the Born to Run album and thought side one, Thunder Road, 10th Avenue Freeze Out, Night and Backstreets, that's an album in and of itself, right? And then, oh, by the way, you used to have to flip it to side two, whether you had the old school vinyl or the cassette when that came out, to go Born to Run, She's the One, Meeting Across the River, and then finish with Jungle Land. See, these guys don't know what an album, like you used to play an album, because there was a story that went along with it. Now it's just go from one song to the next.
And the history of rock and roll is in the liner notes, right? On the album covers and inside. And it's amazing. But the greatest thing, I will repeat, is that when we approach Bruce Springsteen and you know, suggested that we could be the steward of his archival legacy here in New Jersey, it was he who said, I will do this on basically one condition, and that is if you use this as an opportunity to tell the story of American music in all of its forms, of which Bruce Springsteen is one extremely important chapter, but only one chapter in an ever-unfolding story.
That never ends.
That never ends, exactly. I mean, we'll continue ad infinitum. And for us to be entrusted with the ability to tell the history of American music, its influence on our society, and to celebrate it is an awesome responsibility. And it's something that when it's up and fully operational, even if our students don't know yet and appreciate Bruce Springsteen, they're gonna know and appreciate some of the other artists that we are bringing to campus as part of the celebration of American music. And so that is my commitment to our students. One, I want you to understand Bruce Springsteen and what he offers, but there will be all kinds of artists, older ones and more contemporary ones, that you will know. There'll be no better campus in the country for students who are interested in American music.
And you know what's great about it? As we talk about music, which is something you love, which is something I love, and the connection that it brings here to Monmouth, we're talking about it in a college radio station. You know, as we kind of sum up this this episode, we've got one more thing that I definitely want to get to and bring up. Like a college radio station back in the 70s when Born to Run was starting, or the 60s, Like, that was part of the fabric of American music. That's how so many bands started. That's how Bruce got his role going a little bit, and so many other bands after that. So as we sit here with a new audio board and a great facility at WMCX in the Plangear Center, with our Department of Communication, like, this is kind of one of the heartbeats of campus.
And it is the way in which so many American artists were spawned, were college campuses, playing college campuses, and trying to get their music played on college radio stations. So let's keep that tradition going.
Now, can we talk about how you get into some of these events? Can we get into that?
Well, once our building is open and the like, it'll be easier. They sell out in a minute and a half. I mean, it's literally 700 seats gone in like 3 minutes. So you might need to know someone.
It's such a great way for people to get to know the university, without question. Let's close on this. We're recording here today, September 10th, which means tomorrow marks another anniversary of September 11th. Prior to you being university president, I have always thought the school has done a great job of recognizing the different events that took place on that day, at different times, with the clock tower going off, and you'll hear the bells ring on campus, because September 11th, especially here as a university that was a stone's throw away, you could go a mile up to the Atlantic and you could look to your left and you would have been able to see smoke from your north in Manhattan. It might be that much removed from 2001, but still, again, generational for you, for me. I could close my eyes and I could tell you exactly what I did on that day.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I was not living here at the time, so upstate New York, where I was at the time, we didn't feel it quite the way I'm sure Monmouth University did, given that so many folks live around here and commuted in New York. We try to remember it every year. We will, as you mentioned, the bells will toll four times to commemorate the four incidents on that morning. We will light up the Great Hall and the Guggenheim Library. That was a call that went out from the 9/11 Museum and Memorial in New York that just said, join us across the country in commemorating this day by lighting up your key buildings. So we're going to do that tomorrow. We always have our ceremony around the 9/11 Memorial that we have right across from the Student Center. I just think it's important to try to remember this, because we said on that day, and we reiterate every year since, our promise that we would never forget. And I understand a lot of our students, all of our students now, most of our students now, weren't born then. So it is a historical remembrance for them. For you and me and so many of us who lived through it, it is a much more personal remembrance. So I am glad that we have a chance to record right around 9/11 so that we can remember that fateful day.
Well, I am among those university-wide that appreciate you as university president continuing to make sure that day is thought of and remembered. This was a ton of fun. Wrapping up episode one, we're going to do it in October, November, and December. Appreciate you, as always, coming by and giving us your time on Monmouth Matters.
Monmouth Matters. I mean, we chose that name because, you know, I feel there's like a double entendre there. Monmouth Matters, so all the Monmouth issues going on around Monmouth from the president's perspective, and one of our most popular professors' perspective, but also because Monmouth matters. This place is important, and imagine what we would do if Monmouth didn't exist. So let's use this as a chance to celebrate how important this institution is, and that's what we'll do when we're together.
We will continue promoting all of our episodes. Look forward to our students breaking the episodes down, getting some clips up and out on social media. Again, we are back in October. Frank, Chloe, John, Nick, for University President, Dr. Patrick Leahy, I'm Matt Harmon. This is Monmouth Matters. You're listening live, WMCX 88.9.